everybody, and thank you all again so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, sitting in here, just chilling, is Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in a chilly afternoon at Skeleton Studios. It's a bit overcast, a little chilly, but I'm all right. I'm doing good. Physically, I'm doing good. I drank my AG1. I feel all right. But I am a little bit scared and freaked out by these videos that have been circulating. And I know lots of people have sent them to me. I've showed them the cam. This jellyfish UFO is kind of freaky.
Yeah.
It looks like Optimus Prime, but without the head, right? And it's just floating through the air. I know lots of people told me that, oh, it's a bunch of Mylar balloons. Other people told me it was bird droppings on the camera. But if you look at it, it's not either one of those things. First of all, they're using FLIR. And you can see it alternating through warm and cold and changing its cut like it's trying to cloak itself. It's completely silent. You can see dogs in the background, people completely unaware. If you don't have any idea what I'm talking about, go on any search engine and just search up jellyfish UFO scene. It's pretty amazing. I mean, this was captured a couple years ago over a U.S. military base. And it flew over for a few minutes, and then it went out into the water, descended beneath the surface for 17 minutes, came up, resurfaced, and then shot up into the atmosphere, never to be seen again.
Never to be seen again.
Now, apparently...
Now, didn't Corbell's the one that started really talking about this?
Yes, right. Yeah. And yeah. If you're not familiar with Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp, they have a pretty cool podcast called Weaponized. I suggest you go over there. They have a guy on that's what his job in the military was to operate these cameras and stuff. And they have him on, and he's like, oh, yeah, this is not only real, but I'll tell you exactly why and other things that he's seen that we're not supposed to talk about. And apparently, this Gundrum-looking Robotech flying thing, this isn't the first time this thing's been seen or something like that has been seen. There's a nuclear site, not where they're stored, but where they're created and made. They've seen them there. Something is piloting these things. Are they drones? Did it go into the water to go down to a USO and download what it found? I don't know. And then there's been another one that's just surfaced called the Chandelier UFO. Now,
you're creeping me out.
As compelling as these things are, is it just a distraction from something else that's going on? I don't know the answer, but when I watch stuff like this, it does freak me out more than just lights or anything, because you can see it and it looks like a mechanized Robotech. If you're old enough to remember what Robotech is,
you know what it makes kind of freaks me
Voltron
out?
Voltron without the head on it. That's what it looks right. like. And I didn't see seven cats, you know, come together and
inform it.
But I mean, it is weird looking.
I think about like when they have those guys come on that said, you know, this stuff's been going on for a long amount of time. Like we've been watching this for a while. This happens quite regularly and they've just not released it. It's just slowly getting leaked out as it happens. It's one of those things that, like you said, like, is it they're trying to take our mind off of something else or right. is it truly coming out because now they can no longer control it?
I think that might
like
be
the case.
Like
their finger is in the dike, right? You know, and the water's leaking around it. And now it's like it's too much. Like, you're just going to have to pull your finger out of the leak and run, and then hopefully it just takes care of whatever. Because it's getting to the point now to where more and more people are looking for these things.
Well, I think the advancement in our optics, so yes. Now we're detecting them. Maybe they've been here all along. It's just we never saw them. I mean, that's what David Fravor and those guys—
That's what he spoke about.
Talk about is when they updated their FLIR, that's when they started catching these things. So maybe they've been around. I know this. UFOs have been around, sightings of them, as long as humankind has been around. So— I'm not saying they're extraterrestrial. I'm saying I don't know what it is. But wouldn't you think if China or some other country had the capability, why wouldn't they be using that to take over the world, not just kind of watch what we're doing all the time?
Well, I think if it was another country, I think they would be more of a flex.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right?
They would be more like,
you got that. That's cool. Check this out.
And I would think our government would be a lot more worried about trying to intercept or to take one down. To really, you know what I mean? To get their hands on it. And it's like they know right now, like, dude, we could get lucky and shoot at one. But we may not. Like, we've been sharing this planet with them for quite some time, it seems like.
Yeah, and what is it? I mean, maybe there is a civilization under the ocean or something we're not aware of. I know we've interviewed Robert Salas. He was one of the guys that worked in Montana at the missile site.
Dude, he was cool.
Where it shut him down. But apparently they're not just shutting down ours. They've done the same thing to Russia. They've done the same thing to China and other countries. There's something has showed up. Shut down their nuclear missile sites. And it's like, yeah, you think you have control? You don't. Only because we allow it.
What was funny about Mr. Salas, or even talking to him on and off air, is he didn't seem surprised.
Right.
Like the whole deal, like after it happened, everything else that's happened that, you know, space related and UFO related, he didn't seem surprised at all. It's like he instantly knew with that encounter, like those things are highly intelligent and there's nothing we can do that they don't want us to do.
Yeah. That's
like, they control everything.
That's why the subject matter is, it's fascinating.
It is fun.
If you go on, let's see, I'm trying to remember what they said. If you go on Tubi TV, if you have Tubi TV, there's like a 3 or 4 part set series by TMZ that they did with George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell, and they explain all of this. I'm pretty sure it's free.
Pretty good.
So you might go check it out. Yeah, I watched it a couple days ago, and it was, it freaked me out and was entertaining at the same time.
That's the best way, right?
But speaking of entertaining and freaking me out at the same time, check this out.
Oh,
a
no.
Delivery driver observes and smells a creepy deer man near Harrisburg, Arkansas.
Now, I've been to Arkansas several times, and I've observed and smelled creepy beer men, but never deer men.
Check this out. It says, this happened to me in January of 2014 on a back road in northeast Arkansas. At the time, I was a newspaper delivery driver. I picked up my papers from the press, usually around 12:15 a.m., and it was a 45-minute drive to start my route. At the time, I was a cigarette smoker, so after I bagged up enough newspapers to sustain my route for a while, I'd light up a cigarette, roll down the window, and it was being cold. I tried to keep it up as much as possible because my car back then didn't have AC. There's a really long stretch of gravel road called Old Military Road near Harrisburg, Arkansas. On the left side of the road are mostly houses, and on the right are fence posts and open pastures with barns and troughs for horses and cows. It is in the middle of nowhere. There are no street lights. Some people have floodlights in their yards, but that's about it. So I'm driving along with my windows down, smoking my cigarette. It's about 2:20 to 2:30 in the morning, and I begin smelling a combination of burning hair and urine. Like, not a mixture of the two, but one and also the other. It isn't a great smell. I toss the cigarette and roll my window up, but can still smell whatever this awful smell is.
God, that's bad.
The further I go down the road, the worse the smell gets. Usually, I see some of the cows sleeping outside or horses chilling sometimes, but nothing tonight. So I know that I'm not the only one who picked up on something being weird this evening. As I'm coming up to the fork in the road, I have to take a left. There is this big open field to the right, and I see what looks like a man, but it with a deer's head. It was too dark for me to tell whatever it was, a man wearing a deer skull or an actual human deer cross, but it was definitely the source of whatever the smell was. It scared the heck out of me, and I didn't want to go hang out long enough to figure out exactly what it was. To my perception, he was at the shoulder, about 7 foot tall. The head probably added another foot of height. I don't know, but it was massive. There were definitely deer antlers, and the smell was disgusting. Like I said, hot trash, urine, and fecus. I saw him stretch his arms. Imagine Fleck. I can't.
You can't keep it together. Come on. You got it.
Listen, I know it's urine and feces. It just sounds better when you change the pronunciation. Okay?
You got this. Come on. I believe in you.
I saw him stretch his arms. Imagine flexing your arms and chest by making a wide C with your arms. His movement for 2 or 3 seconds that I saw him looked to be human. I found a new job in late January and started in February, but I was not interested in ever being out in that area again. It was a creepy deer man, and I'd hope never to meet him again. Thanks for all you do, PK.
Yikes.
Well, aside from the jokes, I'm not trying to make fun of your sighting, PK.
No, we Thank try you. To amuse ourselves.
But, right, I mean,
we're making each other laugh, folks. Sorry.
Look, I'm scared, right? That's my natural. So I, yeah. You know, when people laugh when they get nervous or scared, that's what I'm doing, right? Because I don't want to believe there's a giant 7 or 8 foot tall deer man walking around the
I don't need to
county
believe
roads
that while I'm in the woods
of Arkansas.
Right.
Now, look, I guess it could be somebody who made an elaborate deer hat I mean, we've seen people create these things. My
Not
dad
the
has
safest a, bet.
Has an alligator hat, you know. But I wouldn't be walking around at 3 a.m. No. trying to scare somebody and flex it and stuff. I mean, like,
yeah, brother.
It's a good way to get run over or shot or who knows what else. I don't know. I know that in that area of Arkansas, we've been up there several times. There's lots of chicken farms, right? Tyson seems to own every chicken farm up there. But I don't know what this is, and why does it seem like more and more people are reporting these not deer?
It is odd that it's slowly begin to escalate more and more of these. You know what? I don't know that it's happening more as much as it is more people are starting to take notice when they see deer. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, more people are watching the animals, and also with more people moving into areas and more and everything growing and shifting around ever since the COVID times, all the jostle of the United States, maybe that's just what's going on. More and more people are moving into these areas and more are taking notice of things that could be out there.
I don't know, but I got another one here. Check this out. This one comes from West Virginia.
Oh, Mountain Mama.
That's right. It says, this happened in West Virginia about 10 years ago. I've done my best to stuff my memory of it down deep, but I accidentally watched a video on YouTube that basically re-traumatized me.
Oh, no.
What the presenter said really freaked me out and brought up this memory, and now I don't know what the F to do with it. She discussed deer gods and interdimensional being encounters. When I was 22, I went out hunting with my dad and uncle. We each had our own deer stand and blind in the private hunting ground that my uncle owned. About halfway through the morning hunt, there was this big buck that strode into my view. But he didn't look quite right. Not in a sick or mentally ill way. His eyes, for some reason, they looked more, well, human-like. The eyes looked like they contained a lot more intelligence. I put my gun up to my eye to aim, and the buck stopped cold. I swear he was looking at me. He knew. Then when I took the shot, my trusty gun would not fire. In a scramble, I checked my gun to see if the safety was on. It was fine. But it wouldn't shoot. The deer just stood there and kept staring at me. So I racked the bolt and put another round in. And on my second check of the gun, I got a really weird and eerie feeling. When I looked back up, this thing was standing on its hind legs and staring at me. I froze. I started to change. This thing started looking like it was walking on its hind legs and picking up speed directly towards my tree stand. I left everything and fell about halfway down the ladder. I know I screwed up my ankle that day, and I didn't care. I was terrified. I could hear the footsteps running toward me, and I ran as fast as I could. Maybe like a fourth of the way to my dad's blind, I looked behind me because I was still hearing the footsteps, what I thought were right on my heels. But there was nothing there. The running steps chased me almost until I got to the blind. My dad thought I had been shot or something because how I was behaving and breathing. He carried me to the truck, and when I calmed down, he told me that he'd never heard that he'd... I'm sorry. When I calmed down, he told me that he had heard of similar stories in the area. I haven't gone into the woods or hunting since. That was 10 years ago, and until now, I haven't known what to do about my experience. I've been kind of watching and listening to paranormal shows since then, trying to make sense of it. Just last week, I watched that video on YouTube about deer and the relation to death, gods, Fortean theories, and the like. Since watching that episode, I've been messed up, thinking about that. Was I trying to kill a deer god, and that's why the buck chased me? It had some great points, and I mean, the host of the show had some really great points and a really interesting interdimensional theory as well. It might have put some pieces together for me, but should I go back in those woods and apologize? I don't know. I'm paralyzed in fear to this day about it all, and I'm not trying to make any new enemies, especially with some wild god. What do you think I should do? Quentin.
First thing, Quentin, is go ahead and drop us the pin on X, where this thing was at. What do you think it scored?
Wilds of West Virginia, right?
Yeah, right.
Man, I don't know what to do. You know what I would do? I would leave it alone. I'd just find another hobby.
You would fill your Kahakee hunting pants with urine and fecus if something like that happened.
Hunting's not for everybody. Find a different hobby, because I know I would give it up. Well, like, I'm going to take up tap dancing or something.
Again, we make jokes and we laugh because inside I'm freaking out thinking about what if I actually saw one of those when we're out there and all I've got's my recurve. Now, just so y'all know, I'm a deadly man with that recurve out to about 15 yards. I'm pretty solid at 20. Anything outside of that, I might as well just throw the bow at it. So I don't shoot at anything past about 17 yards. So I had to be 17 yards from a 7 foot tall deer god. Yeah, that's going to be a problem. That's a hard no for me.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine it either.
Well, and also, like the way he said, it's like it noticed him from that distance. Like, oh, it's pointing a gun at me now.
The only thing I could think of is, like, I'm not discrediting the story, but I've seen deer stand up on the back legs and, like, paw at one another and stuff. Like, maybe it was – and something blocked the view and he couldn't see the other deer. You know, and in a split second, you're like, oh, man, that thing stood up. It's coming for me. I'm out of here.
But they saw it start running towards him.
Yeah, that's
– And how far – I don't know. I don't want to know.
Yeah, creepy.
Very, very creepy. Before we take a break, I'm going to drop this on you because I know you're going to like this. We talk about dog man. We don't talk about dog dad man, right?
That's I didn't even know that was a thing.
You're going to find this very interesting. This takes place in New Mexico. Little sighting went down here. Says a well-known M writes this. This is a well-known researcher mentioned in an older interview the tale of a child who had gotten separated from her parents in the Yosemite National Park. When she was found, her story differed greatly from all the others. She had told her parents that a dog man had found her, had laid with her to rest, had given her berries from his paw, and then led her back to her family. That's the first time that this person said, I'd never heard anything about a werewolf-type cryptid doing anything more than just scaring the heck out of people, right?
Right.
So then says this. This brings to mind an incident between my little sister and myself. She was 16 at the time. I was 24. We were in a fairly placid highway on this highway through the Valley of Fire outside of Carrizo, New Mexico, bound for Ruidoso back in 2011. As we rounded one corner, we both looked to the left in time to see a gray and salt and pepper fur-covered, very tall, very muscular man with the characteristic dog legs, same bends and everything. We screamed and I swerved. We thought instantly that we had seen a goat man, yet there were no horns. Some goats don't have horns, so we didn't seem swayed by that detail. But he was wearing some clothing. In fact, the most notable being baggy denim shorts. I'm thinking denim cargo shorts, y'all, like a dad.
Jorts.
Right? He's wearing jorts. And crazy. He says, I know this sounds ridiculous, believe me. She and I were dumbfounded as to how or why something so wild-looking could be wearing clothes. It was late afternoon around 4 p.m. and he didn't hurry when we came into view. He just sauntered on normally as though he didn't care if he was spotted. He didn't even look at our car despite my erratic driving when we noticed him. I drive by that spot regularly on commutes for the doctor between Albuquerque, New Mexico and Ruidoso. And though I've never seen him again, there's a small bluff right there with beautiful rocks in a tall stack that would have taken three or more human males to lift and stack the way they're situated. I always see it, and I figure it had to be Mr. Wolfman who did it. Goatman simply makes no sense anymore. New Mexico is infamous for its goatman stories, though, so we assumed based on an idea planted by local history. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be in Albuquerque pretty soon, so please let me know. I'm going to be. Was it wearing a basketball jersey like Teen Wolf?
You know how awesome that would be.
That's what I picture. Give me a keg of beer.
Yeah, no, just shirtless like a dad bodding it up with
it
his
had
werewolf
jorts on.
Werewolf jorts on.
But that would make sense if shape shifting was a real thing. Why wouldn't it still have the pants on?
Well, right? You remember in Teen Wolf when his dad shifts, it's just dad standing there in his flannel shirt and his glasses. And he's just like, I know I've got some explaining to
do. When I was a kid, I used to watch Lou Ferrigno as the Incredible Hulk. Remember, and he would like Hulk out. And then when he came back to him, like, how do the pants not be tore off?
Everybody's like, where, why? Yeah.
So, that is crazy. Speaking of crazy, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, we're going to be talking about even more encounters with the Fae. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Philly, more Fae stories. Look, apparently y'all love them as much as we do. We got all kinds of stuff, people talking about it, sending stuff in from around the world, getting stuff we're talking about. It's not just in little pockets of areas that you thought. So I'm going to hit y'all with one right off the bat. Comes from Australia.
Okay.
Now look, we all know there's going to be fairies in New Zealand because we've all seen Lord of the Rings. So we know that's where they come from, right? There's a bunch of them down there. Same as in Australia. There's got to be stuff out in the bush we know nothing about.
The Yowie.
The Yowie, yeah. And giant lizards and giant sloths and no telling what's all down there.
Spiders. Ginormous spiders down there.
Stop. Everything. You don't even know. There could be a water hole out there, and there could be a big saltwater croc, and you don't even know it, right? You get up and you're like, oh, there. Oh. It's just, that's the only water around. It's just a crazy place. So get a load of this. So a woman says that I was down by the creek in the bushland on the acreage that we lived on. I was skipping stones on the creek when a stone I had just tossed stopped and floated in place in the middle of the creek. Now a small head emerged from the water, and it became clear that it was this creature who had caught the stone and was holding it just above the water. Its face was pale and luminescent, almost glowing. Its hair looked like little weeds that were everywhere by the creek, and its eyes took up most of its face and were large and dark.
Hey, is that little weeds over there?
That's
little weeds.
Little weeds, right there. Said it looked to be about the size of a blue-tongued lizard, so quite small. The creature looked at me with an annoyed look on its face before throwing the stone back towards me, where it landed down by my feet. When I looked back, the creature had disappeared again, and there was a little ripple on top of the water where it had been. Now, talking about its face being pale and luminescent, almost glowing, is really, really interesting because there's a lot of these tales, right, of lights around the waters, around all this stuff. Now, this person says that it felt more magical and nature spirit feeling. Like I could feel the mischievous nature of this creature the moment I saw it. So with this story, the reason I wanted to bring it up right off the bat is the stories of the water babies.
Right, yeah.
Right, we heard stories from Native Americans in North America. We hear these stories all around of water babies, of something a lot like this popping up, being involved in all these things and getting this look. Just the idea of a large-eyed creature in the water that's a fae, I don't know why it makes sense.
I would have skipped another stone right at it.
Right. While it's holding that one up, I was like, take that one with you.
The reason I say that is because when we were kids, remember we used to get in the Brazos and we would skip rocks at each other and we'd get yelled at by our parents to stop skipping rocks at each other's face.
That was true.
Which in hindsight makes sense, right? It would have knocked
a tooth out at all. Like, yeah, that was pure luck. But
it's the kind of stuff you did back in the day.
That was the fun you had when you didn't have a tablet, right? Or you didn't have adult supervision.
That's a good thing that you brought up, though, about the water babies. I completely forgot about all the legends and lore around water babies. And what's crazy is, just like with the Fae encounters, different parts of the world have similar stories of the water babies. They just call them different things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know that there's a lot of Japanese folklore.
Well, now it starts
making monsters in the water and rivers that will drown children.
Yeah. Well, and I did not long ago talking about the Kushtaka up in Alaska. Remember where they talk about the otter people?
Yeah.
And it kind of, all of these water fae creatures. So it starts making a lot of sense.
This is where it comes into, you know, you don't know. Or do you think that there was accidental drownings of children and so the locals made up these stories about some kind of fae drowning them? Or did somebody witness something drowning their child and then you know, the stories immersed after that, and it was spread. And much like, you know, kids, or, I'm sorry, parents telling their children, you better go to sleep, or the Baba Yaga is going to get you. People made up these stories about the water cryptids to keep kids away from the water so that they wouldn't drown. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And personally, I believe that there was probably a lot of that if there was, you know, like a lack, you couldn't, you had more to do. You couldn't actually supervise your kids. You would tell them those stories.
Sure. And, or both are really did happen, but it's going to help me as a parent. I'm going to continue the folklore keep my youngins away from the water. Just like if your little granddaughter, you told her like, don't go down there or the water baby
kids
will get you.
Why? And now you have to be like, here's why. This is why. But another thing too with it is a lot of the stories that we've read and covered and whatnot, you don't ever hear. Of course, I know that you're not going to write the stories when you're dead, but you don't ever hear about people saying, I witnessed a fae creature grab someone and drag them into the water. What you read or study about a lot of is a fae creature calling to them, luring them to the water, not physically interacting, but playing with something that where it's like your mind, your willpower, whatever it is. I find that even more threatening, I guess, than a physical. You're talking about something the size of a blue-tongued lizard. I don't know. I didn't look up how big a blue-tongued lizard is.
Yeah, I have no idea.
But I can tell you this. If me and a blue-tongued lizard were to get in a fight, bet on me. Bet the house on me. I'm going to beat the blue-tongued lizard. That's how this is going to work. But if the blue-tongued lizard has some kind of telepathic ability to whip you in some kind of trance, well, then what? Right. You don't have to be very strong whenever just like, he's got me. That's it. Peter Pan to me or whatever with the rat where he's playing the flute and just the Pied Piper just walked me off into the river.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like because we get reports in some of these stories y'all are going to start hearing about music, about the sounds of music around whenever there should be nothing.
And I like those stories. People are out in the woods. They hear this music coming from somewhere, right? They walk down a path, and then it's like time stops for them, right?
Yes.
Like it's a time slip. And some people are able to walk away and get away from it, and they're like, man, I don't know what that was, but it could have been real bad. And then other people go missing in the woods, much like David Pilatus points out. Mm-hmm. Maybe those people hear the music, and for whatever reason, they follow it, and they can't get away.
Yeah, you get on one side of the veil and you can't come back.
Yeah, maybe. It's another dimension.
Yeah.
Or they partaked in the food and drink of the Fae, like everybody warns you about.
That's true.
Maybe it's not alien abduction, but something. Because there's a fine line in a lot of stories between Fae and changelings and alien abduction. There's a lot of similarities in both, and it makes you wonder, is it the same thing? But, you know, in Celtic times, that's the way they described it. It was more fae folk where, like, if you go to Portugal or something, Brazil or something, it was more alien or something else. You know, maybe it's all the same thing or maybe it's many different things. But you know what I'm saying is, like, the abduction stories are very similar in modern times when you go back and look at some of the old fae changeling stories where they would kidnap or abduct a person.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And like you brought up, or is it the fact that we've just changed its name by calling it aliens and UFOs and it's still all fae based?
Correct. Because what's one thing that's common with UFOs is orbs.
Yep.
And orb sightings. Well, what's the difference between an orb sighting and then these fairy lights?
Yeah.
Not much, right?
Not much, because they all seem to be the same. Everything about them seems to be the same, except other than a few spots, but it leave it up to us to try to single it out.
I think you're right.
Compartmentalize it.
And it's because of we grew up watching TV, and so we saw alien movies, UFO movies, where if you grew up 500 years ago, you never saw nothing like that. You see an orb, it's fae. It's not alien.
Yeah.
So it's all relative. Check this one out. This takes place in the 90s from a woman in Colorado. She says, when I was in a car one time with a friend driving down a country road near a small bridge in a redwood forest, all of a sudden, a half man, half animal creature with little nubby horns ran out in front of our car and trotted in front of us for some distance. When the road got to the small bridge, this being ran off the road and went down under the bridge where we couldn't see him anymore. Now, while he was running in front of the car, we got a really good look at him. We saw him as plain as day. He was amazingly beautiful. And we saw him amazing in amazing detail. His top half was a human body that looked like a well-built young man all the way down to the belly button, and then the bottom half was the lower half of a shaggy, goat-like creature that matched the size of his top half. He had small, nubby little horns coming out of his head right at the forehead hairline. He had light-colored curly hair that came down to the base of his skull. His face was very pleasant. We felt absolutely no fear while seeing him, only a sense of wonder and excitement. It was one of the happiest events of our lives. My friend and I that saw him were not on any forms of intoxicants. We were completely clear-headed and sober. I feel very blessed to have had this experience. I think what I saw was a member of the fairy kingdom. As strange as it sounds, I've had many experiences with the paranormal, which have greatly enriched my life. Most have happened in the presence of other people. He looked like a half man, half animal. I only heard the sound of his hooves clopping lightly on the road. I heard your story about centaurs a couple episodes ago, and I had to write in with my sighting. Thanks for all you do, Sarah.
Wow.
So this is a centaur-type creature, a satyr, you know, and people oftentimes describe this as feeling fae-like. But they saw this thing in the clear as day.
Yeah, you don't misidentify something like that in the middle of the day that close.
Right, and it happened... I don't want to say something, but a covered bridge and it's under the bridge.
Right.
I don't know why bridges seem to be hot spots for paranormal activity.
Moving water.
I mean, everybody hears about bridge trolls. You know, what is your favorite color? You know, all this stuff. Tim, yeah. Tim the Enchanter, is that what his name?
Yes, Tim the Enchanter.
But you know what I mean? It's like we've done a whole episode, I think. I've been trying to remember the name of it. Bridges of something. Because I think Nick Redfern wrote a book years ago talking about all the paranormal things that happen around bridges. And it's like some is like a bridge, like a good spot because something is playing a joke. Like it's a good metaphor for a good place to link two worlds together through like some invisible portal is to use a literal bridge.
Well, and
there's lots of things around them.
In folks' day-to-day life, you don't think about a bridge much, but you have to think about when they were being built hundreds of years ago. It was a huge thing.
Yeah.
To be able to bring land across the water and get to the other side anytime you wanted. Like yeah. That was a big deal, right? I don't know. I love the fact of the idea that it's the moving water, the bridge. It's like those hot points, kind of like we've talked about where people go missing in the granite fields. Like maybe this is one of those spots where it goes down. Here's another one I've got for y'all from Australia. You're really going to enjoy this. Comes from Queensland. I didn't know anything about till this story came in. I'm like, this is crazy. It says my ex-husband and I were helping round up a small herd of cattle at my brother's property. And both men, of course, were complaining about the job and how hard it was and how terrible it was going. And it was going to get worse because of two rogue heifers who didn't like to be penned up. And they always led the other cattle away when you were trying to bring them in. So just off the cuff, I decided to ask, hey, give me a few minutes while I go talk to the local Grugash for some help. Now, apparently, says, of course, I was scoffed at. They made fun of me for even bringing it up. This thing, and this is a lot like the creature that in Hellboy, Hellboy's fighting. He's got the big tusks coming out like the first animal he fights. It's some crazy fae creature.
Okay.
So this woman says, I politely asked the Grugash to help the yard, help yard our cattle, help bring the cattle in. Can you settle the cows down? We just want this to be good. Said so, my ex-husband and my brother, they go out and begin to round them up. And literally within minutes... it's perfect. Said the two rogue heifers were the first ones to come in and brought all the rest of the cattle in. So they're like, no big deal. So she says, you know, look, they were laughing at me and kind of giving me a hard time and saying it was just luck, no big deal. So she said, I said, all right, well, now that it's done, I'm going to go ahead and get gone. I got to go clean up a little bit and then I'm going to go pick the kids up from school. All that's going to be done, right? They were going to go there and finish tagging them. She comes back with, you know, after the kids and all that stuff in a little over an hour, hour and a half or so, and they are still working on it. They said, what happened? They said, the minute you left, those two heifers went crazy. They just went nuts, started trying to tear up everything. Go said, it has been nothing but a beating from the whole time. the whole time since you left. Yeah. Said everything was terrible. So said that she got out and had a little thing of milk with her. She'd stopped and got her a little thing of milk. Got out, went around somewhere, like whatever it was, and poured this milk in a dish and said, I'm going to leave it for the Grigash for helping. Does all that stuff. Said apparently they got it all done, you know, got everything calmed down again and got the job done. And that was it. But that literally her asking for help from these fae in the area just helped everything out. But when she left, it was like the guy, this fae creature was like, okay, well, now that she's gone, I'm going back to being a turd.
Wow. You know, this whole idea of gifting trees and leaving food for the fae or offerings is a well-known activity that people have been doing for a long time.
And there seems to really be some substantial interaction going on there.
Yeah, check this story out.
It's so wild.
This comes from a person in Virginia back in the 1960s.
Ooh, nice.
I'd been playing with a younger brother, one of my younger brothers, in our backyard on a summer night. It had been a botanist house, and he had installed many rare and unusual specimens that frequently grew out of season. Where the back garden appeared to end at a river stone wall just past both sides of the garage, there actually were a hidden set of stairs to a private upper-walled garden that was wilder and quieter than its closer counterpart, and on a steeper hill than should have been possible. The night grew suddenly silent. Clouds of lights, like fireflies, rose from the ground, but the light, it seemed more diffused, and then it got into a brighter cloud. The light grew to doorway size, and people began to walk through it. There were male and female, taller than the average adult that I knew at the time, and they were so beautiful that I ached to see them. They wore strange robes that were not on foot. Somehow they seemed familiar. I moved closer to see them better. One woman near the front seemed to command a group of short, stout beings with skin like dark tanned, slick leather, hair, and more like dark animal fur, longer arms. I had felt no sense of fear or danger until I saw those creatures, and I broke into a cold sweat of panic when I saw them. Like the taller people, these seemed familiar somehow, but a little dangerous. Unlike the taller folk who walked forward at a stately pace, the dark creatures scurried near the ground, snuffing and grumbling as if they were tracking something. One spotted me watching and began to crash through the brush towards me, but a very blonde woman near the lead saw it. She looked me straight in the eye, and her eyes widened as if she was startled to see me. I knew that she communicated mentally with that creature, and she seemed to rein it back in with something like a slender golden cord that materialized around the creature's neck. Complaining, it rejoined the party. A short distance forward, the party entered another glowing door-like shape and gradually faded to nothing. I tried many times to see the party again or any trace of the portal, but I never did there. The following year, my family moved away. Some of these were moving forward with a purpose that did not involve me. The shorter, darker ones seemed dangerous, hostile, and hungry. The large party was very quiet, with a dry leaf rustling sound. The short, stocky ones made animalistic grumbling and growling sniffing noises. I suspect that fairies inhabit another dimension that overlaps our own from time to time. Thanks for all you do. Lucy.
Wowzers.
So she witnessed a portal open and these things come out of the portal. And how many times have we heard this before? They seem shocked that you can see. I'm like, uh-oh,
yeah.
You're not supposed to see me. They opened another portal and then disappeared. Now, what is that?
I wish I could do that.
Who doesn't wish they could do that?
That's crazy. Crazy.
I got another one. I know you're going to love this one. This comes from the early 1940s, and it took place somewhere on a county road, Cam, in rural Louisiana.
Oh, this is going to be greatness.
It says, I was about 8 years old, and I was sitting in the back seat of the car while looking out of the window. My father was a doctor. Whenever there was an automobile accident, he always stopped to render aid. Now, this was in the 1940s. There were only two-lane highways, so collisions were fairly common. The car might have been stopped for that reason at the time, or we were driving very slowly. But I looked out of my window on the left side, and on the shoulder of the highway, in the opposite lane, was a tiny horse-drawn wagon with a very tiny driver. The horse was about 8 inches from nose to tail as I looked down on it, and the driver was in equal proportion. The wagon was kind of dingy red. It was a farm-type wagon, and at the time, I did not think that the sighting was miraculous or even odd. And I didn't say anything to my parents, but all I remember is that I wanted to take the tiny beings home with me to play with them. Although I remember it vividly, I gave it a little thought for years. But later in life, I started reading about elementals and fairy beings and realized that I had an actual sighting. I've had no other sighting since. They seemed unaware of me or anything but what they were doing, which was a fairy being man driving a horse-drawn wagon. The wagon and the horse were about the size that could fit into an apple carton. If I seen what the fairy or fairies looked like, I saw a tiny 8-inch horse-drawn wagon driven by that tiny little man. They looked like they were real living beings. The wagon, like I mentioned, was dingy red, and the horse was brown, but I don't remember anything specific about the driver. I heard no sounds. It was on a highway in rural Louisiana, and no one talked about fairies back then. I don't remember ever having heard about fairies at the time. I was around 8 years old. Why do you think my experience was a fairy experience? People have often asked me. And I say, I don't know. I just have a sense or a feeling. I was wide awake at the time. I don't know anything about ghosts or aliens or angels, but I believe that fairies exist and are basically soul-like beings that vibrate at a range of frequencies that humans can't see unless certain circumstances allow it. I never read fiction or nonfiction stories about fairy beings until much later in life, until I was probably 30 years old. That's when I learned about elementals and other fairy-like books. I read one book even called The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall. Since then, I have researched more. The memory of my fairy sighting is still vivid over 70 years later. Wow. A tiny horse-drawn carriage.
That is amazing.
Right?
Dude, that really would be... I always bring up the thing, like the little fairy guy and the little flying plane or the little,
yeah, right,
the little dirigible, anything like that. I can't imagine seeing that.
I can't either, but
it's,
I like the stories
wild
of the, why is it always, it's always miniature.
Yeah, well,
it's
yeah,
never,
I don't know.
It's never ginormous. It's not like a horse 10 times the size of a normal horse and a wagon 10 times the size of a normal wagon was on the road.
Right,
it's
no, always it's always miniature. Little because it's easier to hide right under your nose in plain sight when it's tiny. Listen to this. This is from New Zealand. This took place, Helena sends this. This is, took place in not like 1982 in New Zealand. She writes this in and she says that they were staying at this place for like a, what sounds like a summer vacation. Spent a couple of weeks, you know, at this little spot at Lake Tawakoni or something, you know, something crazy. And it says that where they were staying, that she would go play in the woods and the hills behind this place where they were all hanging out. She said, I come across a large clearing that had an abandoned, collapsed building. And there is where I heard laughing and singing. And then what I thought was a young girl came out from behind the building. Said she was a little shorter than I was. She had very pale skin, but long, like white blonde hair. She said, I stayed that day and played with her for quite some time. We played. She said, we danced and we sang and ran around and laughed and climbed and just explored. But she goes, looking back, I realized we never spoke. Using our mouths. She's like, I just knew. You read this thing like, I just knew about this whole thing. She said, behind that collapsed building, she could hear other sounds, like other laughter and all this. But every time that she kind of went to go around there, that this young girl she was playing with, she said she would get this sense of like danger. Like, don't go back there. She said they stayed there for 2 weeks and she went back there every day. Every day. And that little girl would come out and they would play. And she said, except the one day, she said one of the days towards the end, she went there to go back and there was nothing. She said she didn't even get the feeling. She said it was strange. says that she didn't get the feeling of anything even being there.
You know, you hear this so many stories of young children having an imaginary friend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? And that's what this reminds me of, is the adults can't see it.
Yes.
But the child can see it.
Yes.
And that's what this story feels like to me. There's stories of people that have a well-known, very realistic imaginary friend and are able to give the adults uncanny detail.
Yeah.
That a child of age would not be able to do and be able to repeat it. Like, I mean, it seems very, very real. I had a relative, he's older than me, but his mother told me this, I remember this as vividly as a child, that he had an imaginary friend. And whenever he would get into trouble or mischief, he would blame his imaginary friend. His imaginary friend told him to do it. Or something. And at first she was like, yeah, right. You know, you're just making up excuses to get out of trouble. Mm-hmm. But she said this would continue for a while. And it kept getting worse. And he would never let go of this friend that would talk him into doing bad stuff. So she decided she was going to take him to church. And he practically threw a fit trying to get him into the doorway of that church. And she got him in the church and they spoke to the priest. And the priest gave a blessing and he had communion or whatever. And he went home and he never got in much trouble again. And he never mentioned the imaginary friend again. It was like it was attached to him and it was removed by that priest. So if you have a small child and they're claiming to have an imaginary friend, maybe they're perceiving a fae
creature.
Or a demon or
yeah,
because
maybe.
Not all fae are good, right? There's benevolent ones and malevolent ones. Maybe we talk about this so much time with past life remembrance. It's always like the little children are much more sensitive to these things that cross over, or they choose to prey on children because of their innocence and stuff like that. But it always seems like there's lots of stories of little kids seeing stuff that adults can't see, and they're like, "You're just making it up." Maybe they're not.
Yeah, yeah. Listen to this one here, real quick, before we get out of here. I got to tell you this. Because this one really jumped out at me. This took place in Costa Rica back in the early 90s, okay? Late 80s, early 90s. And the young fella writing this is writing it about it happened to his father and his older brother. And for what the story ends up telling us is, they had a water source up the mountain where they lived, at the bottom of the mountain. They had a pipe that ran down and this whole thing and a pump system and all of this stuff. And one day, they noticed that they had some issues and they weren't getting any water. And I'm sure they'd been monkeying with it before, the way they had talked about in the story, parts of it had come apart. They had dealt with this in the past and they knew. It was late in the day, like around 4:30, almost 5 o'clock. They said it got dark there by 6. It's dark. And of course, you got the mountains and the overcast, you know, all the trees and all the canopy. Of course, it's going to be dark in there. So he says, my dad, you know, this is all according to his mother and all them telling the story, says my dad was real stubborn and he was like, no. We're not waiting till tomorrow. Typical dad, right? We're going right now. Let me get my jorts on. We're going up into the mountains right now.
The Crocs.
Yep. We're heading that way. So him and this dude's older brother and their dog decided, okay, we're going to head up this direction. So of course they got a few tools. The dad's got the machete. They're cutting a few branches and they're, you know, always watching out for snakes in this area as they're going down through there. Wheeling and dealing down through there. The dad's, you know, going in first, and then they got the son, and then they got the dog. And the story goes that as they're walking along, they start hearing this rustling in the leaves around them. They're like, what is going on? They step out, and there's a circle of, it's pineapples. It's like a pineapple area they call pinuelas. The way it's, and there's a circle of them. So it looks like what we know as a fairy circle.
Right, yeah.
Okay? The dad steps in. Then the brother gets in this area. The dog goes in, but the dog can't come in. The dog is at the edge of that circle barking and won't go, almost like there is a physical barrier keeping the dog out. So the dad's like, what's going on? So he starts cutting as he's leading the trail, trying to find the trail. It's like the trail they were on led him into this circle,
right.
And then there's no trail outside that circle. So dad starts swinging the machete. It's not even cutting the leaves. Now, they're talking about how sharp this machete was. And you think as a farmer, and you're especially in Costa Rica, that's one of your important tools.
Yeah, very much so.
You're going to keep it sharp, right? I mean, what's the use of carrying a pocket knife if it's dull? Like, so he's swinging it around there, and they're like, the son that's there is like, I can't believe what's going on. Dad, he's not cutting anything. Like, it's just hitting it like you're not even doing anything with it. said this goes on for like 3 to 4 minutes, 5 minutes. They start panicking. The kid's like, good Lord, you know, the brother's freaking out. It's getting darker. The dad's like, that's it. I guess we're just going to have to stay here for the night. And just kind of like, I guess this is what we're doing. The brother is like, no, no. He's like, I know what there's a way to break this spell. The brother's like, this is a spell. And there's a lot, you know, and of course they believe in the witches and all this stuff. I'm not so sure they're not right, right? As you start looking into some of this stuff, but says, I know. And this is something that I remember us reading. And this is why it jumped out at me. And you're going to know exactly where we're going to go with this the minute I tell you. He told his dad, we have to take our clothes off, or at least one part of our clothes off, and turn it inside out. Inside out, we can break this spell if you turn your shirt inside out.
Really?
So the brother does it. The dad's like, you're ridiculous. Why are you listening to these people that will tell you this kind of stuff? Just basically ignoring him. So the brother's like, we're doing it. Takes his shirt off, turns it inside out, puts it on, and steps right out of the circle. The dad gets up and starts milling around. Everything's back to normal. There's the trail. They can see it again. Everything changes just to be almost exactly the way it was. Instead of going to fix it, they were like, nope, we're going back home. Turned around and came back home, came back the next day in the daytime, you know, got up in the morning and went up there to fix it, went ahead and did it. After they got back home is when the dad was like, you know, there might have been dwendies involved in this.
Yeah.
Like there may have been some sort of dwindy stuff. I brought up the inside out clothing because think of the number of times of the children that they find that have gone missing in the mountains where their clothes are on inside out. They didn't put them on themselves.
Right.
Something there said, it's time for you to go back home, and turned their clothes inside out and
broke the spell,
broke it and pushed them out.
Wow. You know, that's a handy set of hiking tips there for you. If you ever get caught in a fairy circle, turn your clothes inside
out. If you ever think you're lost, there's so many stories of, like we've talked about, with time slips. And there's so many that are very unnerving.
That's what makes the subject so fun, though, right? Yes. Heck, I don't know if these stories really happen, but boy, is it sir interesting.
And terrifying, all in the same
breath. Terrifying at the same time. Well, let's take a break, folks. We got to pay some bills around here. Stick with us. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Faye stories for the wrap up. You were telling me.
I got a cool one here.
Yeah, and it's before remind we fired it up, you were going to hit me with something.
Because when I read this, it's going to remind you of a movie and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Check this out. This took place in Florida in around 2010.
Uh-oh, what did Kevy Kev do?
It says, there was a period of time where I could hear the soft jingle of a bell and the pattering of tiny petite feet in my room, even when no pets were present. None of my pets wore bells on their collars, nor had tags at the time. The sounds occurred at any given time of day, but would pick up more at night. Sometimes I not only heard this strange tiny bell, but felt something jump up on the bed, only for me to find it empty. It was also during this period that I awoke more than once to three small diminutive beings with black skin. They wore hoods and old world clothing in shades. They were standing on top of my shelf, picking through a collection of seashells that I had on display. I watched as they carefully shifted through the shells, their little faces both delighted and fascinated. I could hear the soft clacking of the scallops as they moved them. Once they took notice of me observing, they faded away into the darkness. A couple of times I would awake to find them sitting in my hanging plants, looking through the leaves curiously. These plants were hung from a hook on my ceiling. They would look down at me, observingly. When they realized I was watching them too, they would disappear in the same way they did when looking at my seashells. Sometimes knocking could be heard in the walls, on the windows, and on the doors, only for there to be no one there. My father also had observed them in the garden once right outside of our house when it was built. Our house was the first one built in our neighborhood. It was once a chunk of woods that had been cleared and developed into what is now our home. We believe that the destruction of the woods may have triggered this strange activity. I believe we upset the natural beings that once inhabited the area. Being half Spaniard, I grew up with the belief of duendes. They are a form of fairy in our culture, stemming back from our ancestors. There are different forms of duende, and I believe I may have encountered some form of them. Duendes are a domestic form of fairy that can vary in nature from being playful to downright evil. I believe that the ones I encountered were possibly benign. They had black skin, dark clothing, and varying shades of blacks and grays. The clothing appeared to have hoods, and there was old world clothing. They had pointed shoes and tiny little bells. My house was built on a piece of land that was once wooded. It was cleared right before the house was built. The nature of my encounter, of their physical appearance, and the way they interacted with my environment was more conclusive than any other encounters I've ever had. I believe that fairies are beings that are very real and very in type. Thanks for all you do, P.
Are those cat's eyes?
See, I knew it. That's what you thought of, right?
The minute you said the bell, I'm like, nope.
The little bells.
No.
But she would catch three of them. And then again, when they noticed her noticing them,
they kind of freaked.
They blink out of existence.
Oh.
And what a cool way to think about it, too. It's like there was the woods and we disturbed their natural territory by knocking down the trees and building our house here.
And that makes perfect sense.
It does.
It really does, right? It really, really
it does.
Look, this is going to be the last story we're going to hit y'all with. And I'm not going to leave y'all with anything fun and comforting. No, that's not what's happening. I'm going to pass on this uneasy feeling to everyone whose ears we're in right now, because our buddy Lon likes to hit us with headlines that he knows I'm going to freak out about. This is a little story I want to hit y'all about. A human slug. Yeah, that's right. You heard me.
It reminds me of, there's the X-Files episode called The Fluke Man.
Yes, when remember he gets that? Flat. He's like, yes.
Yeah, that's what reminds
like
me.
Like in an old German U-boat or something. It's where they find it in that tank or something.
Yeah, I remember being like in the sewers.
Yeah, it's something terrible. This was from an Ontario University student. Listen to this. It says, I live in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada, which has many of these little swamps and bogs in certain parts outside of town. Usually, not a lot goes on in these bogs, as you can't really build in them, and there's not a lot that lives there in them, except for maybe some frogs and a muskrat. So anyway, one Friday night, about 7 years ago, I decided to take a break from my university studies and go for some drinks at the local bar with some of the boys. It was a really good night with a lot of drinking to be had, and around a bit after 3 a.m, I decided to start walking home, as I only live 15 minutes away. I was about halfway home and I noticed something unusual at one of these bogs. From what I could see, it seemed that there was some kind of light coming from the water. At first, I simply told myself it was probably just my drunk mind playing tricks on me. But alas, curiosity, and with the help of some liquid courage, well, it got the best of me, and I decided to approach the light. It is what I saw then that I still to this day cannot make sense of. What appeared to be a giant slug/leech-looking creature started to crawl out of the bog with what seemed like two very muscular front arms. As it crawled out further, I got a better glimpse of its body, approximately 2 meters long. It did not seem to have any hind legs, just its front arms, but it did seem to have a slimy underside as it moved quite fast and left behind a somewhat noticeable slime layer. The bioluminescence was coming from a massive bulge located on his forehead and extended down his spinal column. I was completely stunned by what I was seeing and could not move my body and went completely numb. Now, at first, the creature clearly did not notice me as it was headed in a direction perpendicular to mine. Now, I assume that because he did not initially see me. The creature may not have great eyesight or eyes at all, for all I know. But it must also have a poor sense of smell as it was not drawn to me. It was only when I let out a foolish and loud, "What the hell is that thing?" did the abomination stop dead in its tracks. Can we say stopped dead in its tracks, or can you say just stops dragging its body along and turned its hideous head at me?
That's got to be one of the most scariest things anyone's
Dude,
ever seen.
I'm freaked out. Yeah.
This, I mean, how Ooh. Can, yeah, how can terrible, this be man. Real? How can this be real?
I don't want it to be. It was at this point I could clearly see its two large black eyes open up from its eyelids and stare directly at me. As soon as it saw me, its bioluminescence went out, and I was left blinded in the pitch black. I heard a horrific screech, almost like a bird call, but much lower and sounding like it came from deep in the gut. I could hear the creature start to charge at me as I hear its large body and it's dragging through the tall bog grass. My fight or flight instincts kicked in, and you can be damn sure I chose flight.
Man, there's no way this is real.
I picked out the nearest street lamp and ran as fast as I could through the grass till I got to it. Now, mind you, this is a drunk college kid.
That's what I'm saying.
If this is going down, how terrified would it be? When I got back to the street, I was surprised to see no sign of the creature behind me. I'm unsure if it wanted to harm me or just to scare me out of its bog, as I had seen it moving at an alarming rate as it initially left the bog water. Surely it could have caught a drunk, staggering 22-year-old man. I went home after that and vowed never to go back to the bog.
After yeah, good idea.
Good call. After I finished my degree, I moved to Toronto and haven't been back since. I still can't come to terms with what I saw that night, and I'm not sure I want to. I'm posting and writing about all this now just to get it off my chest and to see if anyone out there has had a similar experience or if they can make sense of any of this. Thanks, Kay.
No. I think Lon is trolling you. I can't.
I hope to believe it's not real.
Yeah, I don't think it's real. I think.
First of all, wait. Are you saying that because you really don't? Or are you saying that because you don't want to think it's real?
Both. Both. 100% both. I'm sorry. Some stories, I don't know, I'm a sucker for a face story, but this is too much. A giant slug man.
But is there really any difference? What if it's a fang?
I know it's no difference. I'm not saying it's rational almighty. Thought. I'm saying I can't. I just can't.
You just don't want to think about there could possibly be a slug man crawl out.
Maybe it was like the thing and you caught it like mid-transition. Right?
That is a great point.
Yeah.
That is a great point. Maybe it's a not deer. Maybe it's anything that's out there and it's just in some sort of transition as it's coming out of there, as it's molting and dropping. It's like turning into a butterfly. Yeah. You know what that was? That was a dog man crawling out of the bog to turn into a moth man.
Oh, man. That's
bad
crazy.
Stuff, right?
If you have any crazy stories and you'd like to share them with me and Cam, please send them to us. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show, 888-393-2783. Let's not forget about our wonderful sponsors, Lumi Labs. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, just do a quick search online or go to microdose.com and use our promo code, Expanded, that's EXPANDED, to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. And AG1.
Folks, you got to take care of yourself and take ownership of your health. And it starts with AG1. Do what Kyle and I do. If you want one free year of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase, just go to drinkag1.com/expanded. Super simple. drinkag1.com/expanded.
Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
Man, oh man, trying to stay dry because it looks like the rain's about to hit. Folks, we feel bad for all of y'all that's been hammered with the cold and the rolling blackouts and all that stuff down here. We haven't had the bad weather, just the cold weather, right? It's not been too crazy where we live, but it has been elsewhere. But now the rains are coming in. The cold's kind of going away. Now it's just going to be dreary and wet and rainy for the next several days. So
it has been a very wet fall this year.
It's been wild, hasn't it?
Everything is still green for the most part around here, and that's not the way it normally is.
We're making up for the no rain that we had for, I don't know, what was it, 1,200 days this summer when it was over 300 degrees? I forgot what it was.
Yeah, well, we need the rain, so yeah. I'll take every bit of it because you know the summer will be here before long. Well, I hope everybody out there has a good week. That's about all the time we have for this episode. Till next time, folks, be safe. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.